I'm delighted to welcome Michael McGarrity. He is the author of many books. The latest is Hard Country, a novel of the Old West, which just came out in trade paperback, and he will be speaking at Collected Works tomorrow night at 6 in the evening. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Mary Charlotte, I've decided that the only reason I keep writing books is so that I can continue to see you.
Would that it were true.
Thanks for having me back.
It's great to have you back. And this is a wonderful book. And as we've talked about in the past, it's a departure from some of your other books, even though it's a kind of prequel continuity of these other books.
That's exactly right. It is a departure. It's a big departure. I'm very excited about the trade paperback release, which is coming up tomorrow night at Collected Works. One of the reasons I'm very happy to see it out in trade paperback. Well, there are two reasons. One is a lot of people are, you know, sort of in an economic crunch, and a hardback can be a little pricey, and this will get the book into their hands at a much more reasonable price. And people have been writing and saying that that's what they're waiting for, so I get emails from a lot of fans. So that's always good news, that they'll be able to have the book in hand right now if they like. And the second reason is there's a teaser chapter in the trade paperback, which is chapter one of the new book, the second in the trilogy, the second in the Kearney family saga, if you will, entitled Backlands. And so that's going to be there to whet folks' appetite.
So Backlands is the name of the second book in the trilogy. Now, Hard Country starts, remind us what year this
1875, it starts at the end of the Red River Wars in West Texas, when the settlers were just back and moving in, when there was a little bit more of tranquility, if you will, less fighting going on. And it traces the family from that point in time, their arrival in West Texas, all the way up to and including World War I.
And we meet the ancestors of our famous law enforcement officer, Kearney, who was in the mystery novels that we have talked about on this show many times.
Yeah, and I'm getting emails from people saying, now you're not going to give up on Kearney, are you? You are going to get back to Kearney. And the answer to that is yes. I want to finish this trilogy. Backlands is in progress. It'll be out next June. I want to finish the third book and then return to Kearney. So that's my grand scheme, if you will.
Will Kearney have read Hard Country?
I don't think so. I don't think he's going to be that aware of the intricacies of the four generations that preceded him in the 100 years that passed.
Well, the thing about this book, and I'm sure the books to come in this trilogy, is that you find yourself really getting, especially for those of us who live here in New Mexico, you find yourself getting really grounded in the landscape and the people and the culture and the history of this place through these characters, fictional though they may be.
Well, some of them are fictional and some of them aren't.
Right.
There's a lot of old-time New Mexicans running around the pages in Hard Country, and then again in Backlands. The same thing is proving to be true. The setting is as much a character in all three of these novels as any real or imagined person that's on the page. How can you not have a New Mexico setting be a character? I mean, it's just too varied. It's too beautiful, it's too awe-inspiring, if you will, and too, in some ways, damned undependable. So it is a world unto itself, and a lot of readers have really loved having the setting and the landscape come to life for them. Very few people have complained about that.
And it's a landscape that makes us who we are. I mean, even people who have come from elsewhere, you become aware of the land and the rain and plants and sky and animals in a very different way than if you had lived in a big city in the West or the East Coast or whatever.
It defines who we are. The land has always defined who we are. Place has always defined who we are. And it's no different than Mel Brooks's love of everything Brooklyn, everything Jewish, that helps define who he is as an actor, as a as a writer, as a comedian, as a filmmaker. So, yeah, place is as important to us as, in some cases, our birth parents.
And so here you have these characters starting with John Kearney and Kearney after Kearney,
right.
And the people they love and the people they hate and the people they fight with, and you get to know these characters, you as the author, we as the readers, and they become so real to you. And I was wondering what it's like to have this, especially you've got, I mean, this book is, what, 500-600 pages long, and you've got a trilogy, so we're talking a lot of pages. What is it like for you to live with these people over the years?
I know, I've been living with them since years before I even started writing Hard Country. What happens, Mary Charlotte, is they surprise me. I'm going along, like today I was working, I put a couple hours in, and I'm going along, and then all of a sudden it hit me that I needed to back up in this chapter that I'm working on and say a little bit more about a place that one of my characters had known almost from the day that town was born. And I hadn't thought about that before. I mean, I was just going to take him to Carrizozo. That's where I was going to take him. And then I realized that this man had a memory of a place that wasn't Carrizozo and could recall it from its birth. And so I was able then to very quickly put together what I think is a very nice little remembrance, if you will, of a place earlier in time, and then bring it up to date, then bring it up to date into the 1920s. Which is still remarkably different than it is today. So it's those kinds of revelations that I have that come to me pretty much because I've done the hard research. And I can get off my butt and out of my chair and go to one of my bookcases and start looking around for that little bit of research that I know exists in one of these books that I have somewhere on the shelf. So that's kind of the constant surprise that I'm experiencing as I'm writing Backlands right now.
We're talking to author Michael McGarrity. I've been sitting in this chair in the corner of the Bacon Company for 10 years and have talked to a lot of authors of fiction, and a theme that keeps on coming up is related to what you're saying. The characters surprise you. The characters do things. They have a life of their own. And I think that with a good fiction writer, and this is not true probably of people who are writing sitcoms or things that are really coming from more of a place of let's use these characters as a vehicle for jokes, mm-hmm. or for funny situations, because the characters don't really have a life of their own. Mm-hmm. But when characters do have a life of their own, it really seems that they have an existence that's independent of the author. They have their own DNA. They have their own will. What is that?
Well, I don't know whether you're completely right. I don't know whether it's a full separation from the author. I don't think that's possible. I really don't think that's possible. I think the author has to have some sort of filter mechanism that goes on, that comes through him, and then breeds, if you will, the character's DNA. But it's got
okay. But then you're the father.
Yeah, you're the creator of it. You're giving the character some life. You're giving it breath. But then you have your entire life experience to draw on that you're able to utilize and bring into that character from other people that you've known, other experiences that you've had, situations you've been in, things that you've witnessed or eavesdropped on or done research about. I mean, when you write about a historical character, for example, it's pretty darn important to get more than just his or her physical characteristics accurate. It's as equally important to try to delve into that person's personality. That's where you got to go for primary source research material. That's where you got to go to find out what people had to write about who knew Eugene Manlove Rhodes or Oliver Milton Lee or Bill Malden or any of these people that are grounded in New Mexico history. And so you've got to use that as well. I think it would be foolish to, for example, Eugene Manlove Rhodes had a slight speech impediment, a little bit of a lisp. It's not really talked about all that much, but I think if I had put him on the page as the world's most articulate guy, that wouldn't have been true to him or true to the story that I'm trying to tell. So it's a mixture. I don't think it's a complete separation of the author from the character. I do think the characters jump out at you and sometimes tell you what they want you to do, but that's kind of like magical storytelling happening in your head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the magic of that is something that I think is a deep and beautiful mystery. And when you have the capacity to manifest that, you're lucky.
It's always a surprise. It's always a great pleasure. It always comes very unexpectedly at times. And it just tickles me when it does happen. And it makes that moment or two where you're at work putting it down really kind of special. It's kind of a treasured moment.
Are there any parts that are really hard and crazy making?
That can happen instantaneously at any moment. Struggling over something as silly as putting in too much stage movement, if you know what I'm talking about. You know, there are some times when I'm writing and I just get this rigid thing going in my head where I'll write things like, he got up. He walked to the refrigerator. He opened the refrigerator door. He took out a blah. He sat down. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, I'm looking at that saying, what is this drivel that you've put on the page? So, yeah, there are those times when the writing gets really bad and you've got to just tear it up, throw it away, and start all over again. I don't know if there's a writer out there that has ever written anything that they stepped away from and said, perfect.
Especially the first draft.
Any draft. I don't think I've achieved perfection. The only thing that I have as a rule for myself is try to write your next book better than your last. You know, I'm always looking for that as growth. But perfection, I don't know. Maybe there is somebody out there who does it.
Yeah, whatever that word even means. Mm. But, I mean, I think when you think about... I've actually read a few novels over the course of my life where I would say there's not a word out of place. It draws you in, mm-hmm. holds you,
yeah.
and then lets you down at the end. And there is no place where there's a sentence or a word or a phrase that makes you think, oh man, mm-hmm. this is just wrong, and you get withdrawn from the pulled out of the spell.
Right.
And that's, maybe you don't call it perfection, but that is the achievement of what you're looking for.
That's what you're looking for. Yeah, you're looking for that kind of fluidity, that kind of total arc that takes the reader from the beginning to the end without slowing them down or pulling them out or making them question anything that you've put on the page. On the other hand, there are dozens of books for you and for me, I'm sure, that have done that time and time again, that have just, you know, given you that oops moment.
Yeah.
Where you just say, wait, what's going on here?
Right. And where was their editor?
Yeah. Or where was the writer, too? Because sometimes, I don't know about that. You know, people say, I've never written a perfect book, and there's never a book that I've published that has been perfectly copy edited. No matter how many times I've gone over it, or my editor's gone over it, or a copy editor's gone over it. And I'll have people write me and say, you need to get a different copy editor. And I'll write them back and say, no, it's my book. It's got my name on it. I'm not going to blame the copy editor. I try my hardest to put out a book that's error-free. I haven't done it yet. I'm still trying. I don't know whether I'll get there or not, but it's not the copy editor. It's not the editor.
We're talking to Michael McGarrity. So this book is out. The teaser in the trade paperback, which has just come out and which will be available at Collected Works tomorrow night, is the last chapter of this book is the first chapter of the next book.
That's right.
How far are you along on that second part of the trilogy?
I have got until the end of September to finish it, and that's after I was granted an extension. And I'm looking at right about now 50% of the book under my belt. And so I am telling everybody, basically, I'm in lockdown until the end of September to get this book in. I definitely want to see it out next June.
And then the third one, have you conceived of the basic elements of the third book in your mind?
Yeah.
Or is that...
No, well, what I have in my mind in the third book is I know the time frame it's going to cover. And so by knowing the time frame it's going to cover, I know who some of the central characters are that are going to continue on, and then some of the new characters that are going to show up. So that's going to be there. For example, Backlands starts in 1920, and the way I have it planned now, it's going to go through the end of World War II. So the third book is going to begin then and probably finish up with the end, or the close to the end of the Vietnam War. So in reality, I'll be covering historically major wars that we've faced in this country from the 19th century on to the middle of the 20th century.
And that was certainly one of the themes and plot drivers in Hard Country, people going to war, coming back changed.
Not coming back.
Right. Telling the next generation it's really not as much fun as you think it's going to be.
In no uncertain terms.
And having them not believe it.
That's right. Maybe we're getting wiser as we go on, but... I'd
like to see the evidence of that, but
I would
yes.
too. I would too. Well, I think, to just throw in a little bit of politics here, I think one of the biggest mistakes we've made in this country is, first of all, to end the draft and to make the Army and the military service all professional. I think that's created a culture that is not healthy in a democracy. Following that, I believe that if we reinstituted national service, not just going into the Army or the Navy or the Marine Corps, but national service for all young people, it would be a way of encouraging investment in our government and in our country in a socially responsible, positive way. Whether it's teaching in inner city schools or working with senior citizens in nursing homes or serving in the Army or...
Land restoration
or wildlife preservation, any of those things. A year or two of that would be a boon. And why they can't reconstitute, especially in these hard economic times, ideas such as the Civilian Conservation Corps just boggles my mind. Other than I do understand that that was a Democratic FDR program, and you know the neocons and the conservative Republicans just aren't going there.
Which is odd, because they do seem to like the idea of serving your country.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as it's in a military uniform and we can call them heroes.
Well, this is an interesting conversation, and it does relate to the book, because I think any narrative that's honest, where you have people going to war and getting shot and having those kinds of loyalties and maybe even occasionally seeing the people who are their supposed enemies and things like that, allows us to think about these things, which
we have
are
to
abstractions to most of us who haven't.
We have to think about them. What is a good writer but a witness of his culture or her culture, of life, of society, whether past, present, or future? I mean, that's what good novelists do. They witness these things that are monumental in our lives and raise questions about them. Not necessarily with any sound answers that are going to be all-encompassing, but at least to raise the specter of what the consequences of some of the things that our governments do can have on individuals, on families, on young soldiers, on young wives, on mothers, on fathers. We're so removed from it now with an all-volunteer army that we don't hear enough about it. We don't see enough about it.
As we talked about last time, you also have some terrific women characters in your books. We love Emma. And we assume
Emma's
that
back.
She will be back.
Emma's back. She's in that first chapter.
Excellent. And the whole saga continues. Now, I have to ask you this. Having watched on television various miniseries, this book could not be made into a movie, but it could be made into a 13-part season after season HBO saga that just goes on and on.
That would be nice, yeah.
Are you hoping for something like that?
I would love it if that happened. I had a fellow in Hollywood who was managing that, and his personal life fell apart at the wrong time for me, unfortunately. And so nothing's been negotiated, nothing's been decided. I had a nibble come in a couple of weeks ago from a fellow who's a producer and has his own production company, and I haven't heard back from him yet, so I don't know, Mary Charlotte, I don't know. I mean, the nibbles for the whole 13 books that I've written have been ongoing, but nothing seriously has come my way. And until it does, I'm more interested in telling these stories than I am in worrying about whether that 13-episode miniseries that you mentioned comes to pass.
Well, and that's probably as it should be, because that's what gives the stories integrity.
Thank you. Thank you.
Michael McGarrity is author of many novels, and the latest one is Hard Country, a novel of the Old West. He will be speaking tomorrow night at Collected Works Bookstore at 6 in the evening. And you also have a website, michaelmcgarrity.com.
michaelmcgarrity.com. You can email me through the website. I throw up a blog every once in a while, not too often. The first chapter of the new book is on the website if you want to read it. And great reviews from all over the country for this book that I just couldn't resist putting up for people to read so that they know what other folks think of it. So take a peek at my website and shoot me an email.
Excellent. Michael McGarrity, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, Mary Charlotte. Thank you.